You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to another edition of the MLB Pipeline Podcast. I'm Jason Ratliff, here with Jim Callis, physically here with Jim Callis, and also with Jonathan Mayo, who is sadly not here with us in the desert in Arizona, but will be here soon. The Arizona Fall League is now underway, one of our favorite times of the year. We just had, as we're recording this, just had opening day yesterday. Looking forward to Kumar Rocker making his debut in the Fall League tonight. And we are going to dig into the Fall League a bit. Also, we have an interview with our pipeline pitching prospect of the year, Phillies Andrew Painter. We're going to talk to him. We'll also talk a little bit about some more of our year-end awards, the hitting prospect of the year and our prospect team of the year, which we previewed a bit on last week's episode. We will reveal that team here. And then we will, as always, wrap up by answering a question from the mailbag. Jonathan.
Yes, sir.
Sorry you're not here with us.
I'm there spiritually. And this is, if I'm not mistaken, Jason, is this your first time?
You are mistaken.
It's been a while.
It has been a while.
Calling me from driving somewhere in the Fall League back in 2013 or 14, back in the day. So I remember getting a joint phone call from you both.
Yeah, that would have been 2014. I think that might have been my last time here. It is.
We had the top down, so you couldn't hear us.
Ha ha ha! You both have convertible Mustang Arizona Fall League stories, which I didn't realize Jim has one too. So it's 1,000 degrees out here,
dry heat.
And Jim and I have the air conditioner off so that you can hear us. So by the end of this podcast, we'll be sweaty mess.
Team players,
right? So far right off the bat, fun in the desert. We had a couple media days. The Fall League hosted a couple media days where all the players came out, got headshots taken, interviews done. Jim and Jesse Borek interviewed the top prospect for 27 of the 30 organizations out here, and have a few to pick up. And those interviews will be on the team websites and on the AFL website. And also we'll go in our team by team AFL overviews, which will be coming to your favorite team's website over the course of the next couple of weeks. So keep an eye out for those. And then we got underway last night, and Jim, early impressions from day one of the Fall League.
Yeah, I mean, this will shock you to hear, Jonathan. Fall League is a lot of fun.
No.
We saw many top prospects in action. First game I did, Jordan Lawler really stood out. And it's funny, I talked to him after the game, and he stood out not just for his performance. He had two hits. He had a home run that Jason and I tried to get accurately depicted on StatCast. It shortchanged him by about 50 feet, and the tracking was off. It showed his ball getting caught in
They're
the
still
left
working
field.
On it.
Yeah,
still working on
it was not 361 feet because it went over the 390-foot sign. But he had two hits, home run, two walks, two steals. Didn't do much in the field because he only had one ball hit to him. And I was talking to him after the game, and obviously he's supremely talented. And he's number 6 overall pick in the draft a couple years ago. And I asked him what he thought his best attribute was, you know, because he's a potential 5-tool shortstop. And he said none of his physical tools, he thought, was his ability to remain on an even keel, which I thought was interesting. And he struck out in his last at-bat against, who was it, Connor Selby? It was a pitcher I was not that familiar with, who came out throwing 98, 99. And he worked a deep count. I think it was full count and struck out on the slider. And Ian, we were talking about that. And I mean, I don't know if you've talked to Jordan Lawler much, Jonathan, but for a kid who's 20 years old, mm-hmm. Very mature, very polished. Diamondbacks are going to love him. Their fans are going to love him. So anyway, that was kind of cool. And then I think we'd even talked about, maybe on last week's podcast, or maybe it was off the air, just how I think we were all kind of happy that Heston Kjerstad, who was the number 2 overall pick back in 2020, and literally went 2 years to the day before he could make his pro debut because he had myocarditis. and a lot of expectations and couldn't play, and how it was good that he was healthy and looking forward to watching him play here. And he hit, I think, the longest home run I've ever seen hit at Scottsdale Stadium. He hit it over the, I think it's had many different names over the years, but what is now the Charo Lounge in right field. There was no Statcast, but it was a blast. And just talking to him, we talked to him at Media Day too. You could kind of sense a relief that he's playing again. Like, he's just happy to be able to play every day. And it was interesting with him, you know, I mean, that was a kind of a surprise pick, as we know, when he went number two overall, and it came right on the heels of Adley Rutschman going number one overall the year before to them. And a lot of Orioles fans were like, what did we just do? This is a shocking pick. And he didn't play for 2 years. And I asked him if he felt any pressure, if there was, you know, just the expectations that come with the number two pick. And he said no, that he thought nobody had higher expectations of him than him. And so he wasn't worried about what anybody else is thinking or hoping he can do, because he thinks and hopes he can do more than that, which I thought was a good answer. So, like, both those guys were very good interviews after we talked to them on Media Day too, and obviously very talented. So a very fun first day out here in Arizona.
I think it's great with, you know, Kerstad, that he's probably getting to the point now where he can just go about being a player, you know, and the story won't be, oh, thank goodness he's back. But here he is, just player out in the fall league trying to get some more reps in. And, you know, he's starting to kind of turn that corner and get to that where maybe the expectations of being a high pick, like, are welcome, because he couldn't live up to any expectations for such a long time because of everything he had to go through.
So, Jonathan, in between games, so Jim told you about the impressive performances by Lawler in the day game and then Gunnar Henderson in the night game.
Look at the pressure you're putting on poor Heston Kerstad.
Wow. Yeah, I was just previewing a
looking ahead.
No, I was previewing a tweet that's about to go out about Gunnar Henderson winning the Hitting Prospect of the Year award. Yeah, and Heston Kerstad. So, in between, though, Jim witnessed his first haboob.
What'd you call me?
Have you been out here for a sandstorm for a haboob?
I have not. However, my sister and family live in the desert in Israel, and I have experienced something similar out there. So I am familiar with what that is like.
And it was crazy because, you know, shooting the video of the night game, the haboob was – I had to literally hold down the tripod because the haboob was trying to blow my phone and the tripod across the press box, shaking. My computer was shaking. Papers were shaking. It was crazy weather for the first couple innings of the night game.
Yeah, I want to say that a game actually got habooged out a few years ago. I think maybe Will Bohr was covering a game, and that was my first experience with a haboob. All right, so I mentioned that Kumar Rocker will be making his – it's not, I guess, not technically his pro debut. I don't know how you
and say, like,
unofficial pro debut.
Well, no, well, it's not, because it's not. It's like an off season game. Like, his official organized.
That's why I call it unofficial.
Debut will be next April, and he pitched professionally in the Frontier League. So, but it's like his first time pitching in a game where they're really keeping score while a member of the Rangers.
Yeah, a major league affiliated team. Yeah,
organized ball.
Yeah, so he is starting on day two of the fall league out here. And I think I even, you know, asked Jim on media day when Kumar was there, you know, what we should expect from him, because obviously leading up to the draft, it was a very, very controlled situation for him pitching in the independent league where he was going just a few innings at a time and only pitched a handful of times. What do you guys think we're going to see out of Kumar here in Arizona?
You know, I think that obviously they're going to have to kind of keep him somewhat on a leash. Most of the pitchers were, you know, I guess outside of Brian Wu, who was so sharp that he was able to go an extra inning. But I think that, you know, what, three innings if he commands the baseball, is probably going to be a pretty tight pitch count. So it's going to be, you know, dependent maybe on how he commands the baseball and keeps base runners off. But I would think three would be the max. And, you know, we'll see. He hasn't really pitched a lot, period. So I'm trying to go in with low expectations. I'm sure he'll miss a good amount of bats, and then we'll kind of see how much he finds a strike zone, and that will kind of be determined what kind of, like, how quote unquote successful the outing is.
Yeah, I think the Rangers will handle him with care. He might be on a, I think he almost certainly will be on a tighter leash than most of the starters out here. You know, it'll be different because I know when he pitched in independent ball, when he's kind of showcasing himself in the spring before the draft, talking to scouts, they felt like it was kind of like a showcase atmosphere. You know, he was going out in the first inning, pitching to the radar gun, showing how hard he could throw. Second inning, he was trying to snap off the sliders as hard as he could to show you that the slider was there, his wipeout, you know, his best weapon. And then, like, the command wasn't, you know, it was more about showcasing stuff than pitching, if that makes sense. And I think that'll obviously be different now. I think it's just, you know, a matter of, hey, let's get you acclimated to facing some pro hitters and some game situations so you're, you know, good to go next year. I'll be very curious. I don't even think it'll be AFL results driven, Jonathan, but I'll be very curious if they start him in double A next year after they did that with his former teammate Jack Leiter this year, which, you know, nobody's writing Jack Leiter off, but he did not have a very good season in double A. I would, you know, Kumar's going to be a year older than Jack. So they probably won't send him to double A, I would think, if everything goes well here. And this will be, you know, unlike Jack, who didn't pitch in a game before he went to double A this year, this will give Kumar, you know, some exposure to double A level competition before he goes there. But yeah, it's, I don't know what to expect. I mean, I think I honestly think the most important number really to the Rangers is going to be innings. That, you know, my guess is if he makes six starts, he'll pitch 20 or so innings and they'd be happy with that.
Yeah, I agree.
Okay, back to the other side of the ball. Something we did last year that we found, I won't speak for you guys, but I found it to be even more fun than I expected it to be. We did a total bases pool. Is it a pool?
Sure.
What makes something a pool? Anyway, it was fantasy league.
Four feet of water? I don't know.
Yeah. So we each, the three of us, picked five players from the Arizona Fall League. We did a draft, snake draft, as always. And all we did was just count up the total bases over the course of the Arizona Fall League season. And then because there is such fluctuation with the rosters, players leaving early and injuries, we allowed for replacements if a guy either stopped playing for any reason. So that was a lot of fun. This year we expanded it a bit. Sam Dykstra and Jesse Borek, who will be covering a lot of games out here, joining us. And we don't have to live in the past. We won't talk about how last year's season went.
How you won last year?
Yeah, other than to mention that I did.
Yeah. But
Jesse Borek came away with the first pick, random drawing to set the selection order. Jesse got first pick, and no surprise to anyone, took Jordan Walker. Had you guys had the first pick? I don't know. I mean, maybe would you have taken Walker first?
Yes, as you know, because we were sitting here, the first four picks, I had the fourth pick unfolded exactly
right, Jim's
as I had my mock draft. It unfolded exactly like I thought they would. So, yes, I would have taken Jordan Walker number one overall. Although I said in last week's podcast that I thought Matt Mervis and Davison De Los Santos were perhaps the best bets to lead the league in home runs.
And those were the number two and three picks.
Number four, because I thought Jonathan was going to go.
Oh, I put these in. I put these down on the right. You're right.
Yep.
I thought Jonathan might go Jordan Lawler, go for the polished hitter with some power. I would have taken Jordan Lawler. It pained me a little bit to have the fourth pick, and the first three picks went in exactly the order I would have taken them in. I was hoping Jason would not take Matt Mervis, but he did. So, and then Sam was sad because he had the fifth pick, and he was hoping to get Davison De Los Santos, who swung very aggressively yesterday. And worried me a little bit, but he does have prodigious power in BP.
Yeah, so I went with Mervis second. He was the minor league total bases leader this year, hoping that carries over to the fall league. And then Jonathan, you took Jordan Lawler, who we've already spoken about on this episode of the podcast. And then Jim, Davison De Los Santos, you said he swung aggressively. And I think that's something you can safely project to see throughout the rest of the fall.
That's his MO. He hits the ball far when he hits it, but there will be some swings and misses. But I think in terms of raw power, I think he's right there with Jordan Walker in terms of raw power in the league.
And then the fifth pick of the first round went to Sam Dykstra, and he took Henry Davis, which I think to us veterans of the league, we were a little probably a little surprised by that, just because he's a catcher and catchers typically don't play as much as the other position players in the league. But maybe are we going to see him in other positions in the fall league?
I think he's probably will DH a little bit. I'm more concerned just because he seems to get hit every other time he's up, and so that doesn't help your total base. Just the same, I have some picks later on of guys who draw a ton of walks. In some ways, De Los Santos is a better pick because he's not going to draw walks. You worry about a guy who's got such command of the strike zone, and of course, Henry Davis did get hit by a pitch yesterday. I think the playing time, even if he DHs once a week, or plays, a little outfield or whatever, they decide to move him around a little tiny bit, like they started to at the end of the year, I think his main focus is going to be working on his catching, because that's the thing he needs to work on, especially after so much missed time, and that will cost him some at-bats.
Yeah, very first at-bat of the fall league, he got plonked. I think it was a breaking ball that caught him in the leg around the knee somewhere. It didn't look to be serious at all, but he got hit 20 times in the regular season in
like 59 games.
59 games, right. And like anyone else who was hit 20 or more times played in at least, I think it was 89 games. And most of them were like 100 plus. How does he get hit so often?
He stood pretty close to the plate yesterday. I mean, I think he's on top of the plate. And
he's kind of in a pronounced, he's like in a crouch at the plate. I don't know if that prevents him from getting out of the way somehow, but.
Well, there's a lot of guys in college baseball. I mean, it's toned down. It used to be more extreme, but there's a lot of guys in college baseball who basically don't, you learn in college baseball, we're going to get on base by any means possible. And guys, don't get out of the way of the ball. And it could just be that mentality. I mean, he got hit. Well, it's interesting. His in 2021, he got hit, his draft year, he got hit 11 times in 50 games. And as a pro, he's been hit 20 times in 67 games. So,
I mean, I'd have to think, especially because he got hit in the wrist, and that's the reason why he missed so much time. I haven't actually seen him hit in person. But I'm wondering if his hands are almost, in the strike zone from the get go. So it's hard for him if he's tends in his setup at the plate to be so close to the plate that getting out of the way could conceivably be letting a ball in the inside corner go by as a strike. There may be some adjustments he's going to have to make if it continues to happen at that rate. And also leads to injuries. I mean, it's one thing to get a ball on the shoulder or the backside or something like that, but if you can't keep getting hit on the wrist, because that's going to lead to a lot of time on the injured list.
Okay, let's go through. We're not going to go through the entire draft here, but Jim, did you have a particular favorite pick in this draft? Did you get somebody that you thought you might not get, or do you think you picked somebody that's going to be a surprise? Or
it was interesting. We talked about this. Obviously, Jason and I were talking about the draft. It felt like there were less obvious power hitters. Maybe it was only because there were three of us last year, but there were even when my second pick, I was like, well, there isn't really like a lot of obvious sluggers I want to take. I don't know. I basically, after I took Davison De Los Santos, I focused on guys who I thought would get a lot of total bases because they'd get a lot of hits and hit some doubles, but weren't. I don't think any of my other four guys are sluggers, but I like my last pick is like a second last pick in the draft, Aaron Zavala, who rewarded me with a home run yesterday, four of my five total bases on day one. But I think Aaron Zavala is like a sneaky, I think he's a really good hitter. A little concerned they might draw some walks down here. We're all anti-walk in the total base pool. But I like Aaron Zavala. I think he could have a big fall league.
Jim's team, by the way, Davison De Los Santos, Nick Gonzalez, Matt McClain, Nick York, and Aaron Zavala. Jonathan, your team, Jordan Lawler, Noel V. Marte, Zach Geloff. I'll let you say the next one because I think you picked him strictly so you could say it.
Edouard Julien.
Yeah, it's getting even better.
And I've been working on
it. And Kyren Perry.
That's right. Didn't even realize. Always have Paris.
How about you? Anyone?
Yeah, I actually like Jim's Aaron Zavala pick the best. I did like that pick. You actually, Jason, got the guy I wanted. I wanted Parker Meadows.
I think you too.
Yeah, you have a strategy I've noticed. I think it was last year too, where you know the inclination might be to go for the top prospects, and I think you pay a little more attention to performance, thus taking Matt Mervis in the first round, for instance. And I kind of like that strategy. I was hoping Meadows would get to me at the end, you know, and a lot of the guys that I took outside of taking Jordan Lawler first, I was paying attention to how guys finished. So like Noel V. Marte did not have a great year, but he was red hot at the end of the year. Kyren Paris also did not have a great year, but August and September really swung the bat well. So I'm relying on them being able to carry it over. Zach Geloff was good at the beginning of the year, then got hurt and, you know, had a little trouble shaking the rust off. So I'm hoping that he returns to the form he showed over the first couple months of the season. So, but especially with Marte and Paris, those are guys who I'm like, well, they finished the season strongly. I think they were both on our final hottest hitters list. And that's why I went with those guys.
Yeah. I thought that was probably the case. Well, I didn't know for sure if that was the case with Paris, but I had also noticed the same thing. And I took a look at the same thing at guys who were hot down the stretch and also guys who, you know, sometimes I take a look at guys who haven't played a full season. They're making up time. And, you know, for some of these guys, they've already played 120 games, and you know, you guys have been out here enough to see that sometimes when guys get out here, they're just burned out, and you know, hard to know who that's going to be the case for when picking in this pool. But you can look and see a guy's played 125 games already. Maybe he's a candidate to be one of those players.
The other key too is like you hope for some luck in that, like if you have an outfielder, he's on a team where maybe they fall short of outfielders for some reason. So you get the, because I think most of these guys are going to play four times a week, maybe not Henry Davis as a catcher, but you hope you're in a situation like nobody took him last year. Nelson Velasquez, who wound up leading the league in total bases, was literally playing 6 days a week for Mesa because they were shorthanded in the outfield. And by the point we realized how good he was, nobody needed a replacement. But like, so that's like the, if you could project who's going to get hurt out here and maybe, you know, create more opportunity, that could be a boon as well.
Wow, Jim, wishing
I wish injury on anybody in particular except for the 10 players on both your teams.
I'm gonna share the slacks that say otherwise.
All right, so talked a little bit about guys who are hot down the stretch who got picked in our AFL total bases pool. We're gonna come back and talk about some guys who are hot all year. We're going to talk about our hitting and pitching prospects of the year, and we are going to talk to our pitching prospect of the year. That was the Phillies' Andrew Painter. That's coming up next on the MLB Pipeline Podcast.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Welcome back to the MLB Pipeline podcast. I'm Jonathan Mayo. Very pleased to welcome in to podcast for the first time, and that's Phillies pitching prospect Andrew Painter. Andrew, thank you so much for taking some time after what's been a very long yet fulfilling year for you.
Yeah, thank you for having me.
So I wanted to get to the sort of the crux of the reason to have you on, other than you had a great year. I wanted to talk to you ever since I met you, I think, in spring training for a couple minutes, but I wanted to officially tell you that you are the MLB Pipeline pitching prospect of the year. So congratulations. I know you're not in it right now for awards, and those are all secondary, but I'm just curious, like, your thoughts on being recognized for, there's no way to slice up anything your year, but other than astounding.
Yeah. I mean, it was great, you know, just to kind of get, like, you know, it's always great to, like, get any award, of course, you know, first, like, being recognized just in the organization itself. But then once you kind of expand on that, kind of like, you know, you hear everything that's going on within the Philly system, and it's easy to look at that stuff. But then once, you know, you kind of get that recognition to see, you know, how you're doing in the year compared to everyone else, you know, across all 30 teams. You know, so once I figured that out, you know, heard that recognition, I mean, it was an honor.
Cause it's one thing, you're paying attention to what you're doing, and maybe it's easy to pay attention to what the guy next to you is doing in the organization. But even if you are one who likes to pay attention, I would imagine you can't really have any idea of scope. You're so focused, laser focused on your thing, on, you know, are you, awards aside, are you able now to sort of take a step back and be like, okay, I don't think I could have drawn this up any better than it turned out.
Yeah, absolutely. In season, you know, 6 days a week, so you're constantly moving. So there's never time to kind of like sit down and like think about what you're doing. So now it's, you know, once I got into the off season, it's kind of like, you know, that debrief time to where you kind of look back on it. And, you know, in the moment, you don't really realize, like, you know, what's going on. And it's just because everything's moving so fast. But, you know, outside of it now, it's cool to look back at.
It'd be moving so fast, even if you'd spend all year in Clearwater, but you had to pack your bags a couple of times. I know everyone sets certain goals, and I would imagine that it's often a goal to try to earn a promotion. But I mean, is there, I am sure that you have a high value of what you're able to do, but in a million years, did you think, yeah, no, I want to get to Double A this year? I mean, when was it, when you got to Jersey City that entered your mind, or you know, tell me about what was going on in your thought process.
Yeah. I mean, going into the year, you know, my goal was, all right, let's get to Jersey first. So that was a big thing. And once I got to Jersey and it was kind of, you know, seeing a little bit of success there, then it kind of, you know, after a couple starts, kind of came to the equation. It's like, all right, like, it's a possibility to get to Double A here. And, you know, but I mean, it was all out of my controls. All I could do out there was go out there and pitch, and you know, luckily it worked out.
You seemed, at least by the numbers, and then I did get some confirmation in talking to your farm director a little bit, that you kind of got better as you moved up. And better can be defined in a whole number of things. Obviously, you know, you're just looking at the numbers, you walk fewer guys and things like that. But what were some of the things that you found yourself being able to do as you started facing a higher level of competition?
I think it was just once you got up, even if you were making mistakes and they weren't being capitalized, it was more of like the thought of knowing that, all right, like, I'm going to get away with less mistakes here. They're better hitters. They have better approaches. So I was always trying to stay ahead of it with that. And command wise, and also on the slider, it was constantly trying to improve on that every day in catch play and in bullpens. Because I knew eventually, like, if I kept on doing what I was doing at low A, like, I was going to run, eventually I was going to hit a roadblock. So I was constantly trying to get better in that aspect. So, like, on the command wise, I knew, you know, I finally figured out once I got to Jersey, it was like how important it was to get ahead in counts and how much easier pitching got when you're throwing in those high leverage pitcher counts. So, like, that was kind of what went well for me. And, you know, you see the walk numbers, they went straight down, like, they were down a ton. So that was really it for me. It was really just prioritizing getting ahead in those counts and racing to get to two strikes, and earning that right to expand out of the zone with an off speed like the slider.
You know, I think it's interesting because it might be human inclination to, as you move up and you know, oh, I can't get away with mistakes, then I better make the perfect pitch, you know, rather than, oh, I'm going to still go after him. You know, was there a balance you had to strike with reminding yourself of that and just trusting your stuff? Well, knowing, yeah, I need to tighten the slider up. I need to use my curveball more. I need to use my changeup more, whatever it is. And we'll get to that in a little bit too. But just in terms of, because I've talked to other prospects with really good stuff who, like, they start moving up and all of a sudden, like, well, this guy can hit my 97 mile an hour fastball. So I if I don't put it on the black, I'm in trouble. You know, how did you keep yourself from falling into that trap?
So that's what kind of what I did once I got the high. It was, you know, constantly overthinking and thinking too much, like, oh, I got to make the perfect pitch here. And I got hit around a little bit my first start. And then coming back right after that, you know, it was a strong bounce back. And that was kind of when I realized, I was like, all right, you know, the transition, like maybe, you know, my first start high, it wasn't the greatest, but then I saw, you know, how I adjusted and how my stuff played there. And I was like, you know, it basically played just about the same. So then when I made that transition to double A, I just kind of went in with that mindset. Like, I'm just going to throw my best stuff. I'm going to pitch as if, you know, I was in NIA, and I'm just going to do everything that I've been doing and trust it. And I mean, it worked well.
Yeah, I'll say. Yeah, you did shake off that one rough start. And listen, you've barely pitched professionally, but you've been around the game enough to know that you're going to have bad outings, right? So in some ways, it's a good test to see, okay, well, that didn't go well. That's going to happen in the big leagues for certain.
Yeah.
How do I wash that off and then get back to work and make those adjustments? And it seemed like you've learned that lesson pretty early on.
Yeah.
So I want to ask you about the usage of all of your stuff, because you do have four legitimate pitches. And one of the things when I talked to Preston Mattingly about you, and one of the reasons to move you up is you could have stayed down in low A based on your age and experience level. There wouldn't have been anything wrong with that. But you also could have just dominated with the fastball and slider that you had then. So it was, you know, they wanted to challenge you, see how you react to the challenge. But also, it kind of forced you to start using those pitches more. Like, what was that learning curve like in terms of, okay, yes, I understand I need to use my curve and change up more, but here in Reading, if I don't, I'm in trouble. So you actually started doing it.
Yeah. And it was, I mean, it was crazy to see too, especially the change up specifically. You know, a lot of hitters had the tendency to kind of cheat to that heater and try to ambush it early because they know I was going to throw it early. But once I kind of would start to flash the change up a little bit, it kind of backed them up off the heater. So it was kind of hard to throw like a changeup in low A just because, you know, I was blowing fastballs by people and it was easy to throw just those two pitches. I would say Jersey, it was more of, you know, it was a three. It was adding the curveball, but still not as much changeup usage. And then Reading was kind of when I learned, like, all right, like I need to go to this. You know, if I was getting there on the heater, it was like being able to go to that and being comfortable. A lot of times it was to lefties. And that was kind of the starting point of it. But then as, you know, we went on, there were a couple times where I was going right on right and it just kind of came naturally. So especially like next year going into that, like I'm comfortable with throwing it to both sides.
Yeah, at a certain point, I would imagine it goes from this is a pitch I have, it's usable, to it being an actual weapon that you could use to your advantage, as opposed to I got to throw it because they're making me throw it.
Yeah.
And one of the other things is, you know, and I don't know if you discovered that this year with all the success you had, but there are times where it doesn't matter how many pitches you have, not all of them are going to be working every day, right? You may be in a bullpen and be like, wow, the slider's, nope, just it's not as sharp today. So having four to choose from gives you more options. Is that something that you learned at any point this year?
Yeah, that's always been a thing. And like I've always been in a mindset where it's like, yeah, you, at least if you're using three, that's kind of been my main thing was try to always use three. And then in case one of those three isn't working, then you have that fourth. So it's kind of like a replacement thing. So it's always just nice kind of have those options because, you know, you're not always going to have everything working. So when you do hit that, roadblock, you are able to pull something out of your back pocket, at least, you know, at least try to throw that and have something else to go to, something else to lean on.
You finished the year in Reading, and I'm curious, how much had you heard or been told about the hitting friendly environment, shall we say, of Reading, Pennsylvania? And how much did you have to shut that out so you didn't try to do something different?
Honestly, I'm hearing more about it after the fact. I wasn't really hearing all that much about it. I did have an experience, though, where I mean, we would see like there were balls flying, and I couldn't tell if that was like, all right, these are the double A hitters or not. So I was still kind of just getting used to it. But like after the fact, now looking back and hearing stuff like that, it does make sense. Because balls, any ball that wasn't just hit straight up had a chance.
It didn't hurt you numbers wise. So clearly you were able to still do your thing. You see sometimes in other hitter friendly plays back, in the California League and Reno or Vegas, places like that, or pitchers kind of get out of whack because you got to get outs, even though you're trying to develop and get to the big league. So to not lose that mindset is a little bit of a challenge, I would think.
Yeah, I was kind of blind to it, so it's
Well,
probably for the better.
That's the whole ignorance is bliss thing, I think. When you talk that, so I have to ask you, I don't, your knowledge of prospect history here, but you are the sixth high school pitcher since 2000 to be drafted in the first round and make it to double A in his first full season. Do you know any of the other pitchers?
No, I haven't looked into it.
It's a pretty good list. It's led by this lefty named Clayton Kershaw. I don't know if you've heard of him. Zach Greinke, he's had a pretty good career.
Not bad, not
Yeah,
bad.
not bad. Those are the two headliners. Chad Billingsley, who made an all-star team. Dylan Bundy, who's pitched a bunch in the big leagues. Actually, Dylan Bundy made it up to the big leagues in his first full season out of high school, which is kind of bonkers. And then Forrest Whitley is the most recent. He's had a lot of injuries, but that's a it's a first of all, it's a very short list. So, do you appreciate how rare it is for someone your age to not only pitch well enough, but to kind of be trusted and allowed to move that quickly?
Yeah, I think it's great to kind of just and give all the credit to Preston. He's done a really good job with anyone on our farm, and he's kind of his motto was if you're succeeding at one level, like we're not scared to bump you up and then put you to the challenge. So I mean, it was definitely great. It was kind of cool to see go all the way from low A to double A all within the year, and kind of just see those different steps and see all that within 1 year. So I mean, definitely, yeah, definitely appreciate it.
There were those of us internally who were like, well, they should just put you in the bullpen now in Philadelphia. You could clearly get big league hitters out. That said, I'm sure you have things to work on other than just innings and reps and things like that. I think you've got maybe 100 professional innings under your belt. What are some of the things, even with the success, you weren't in Reading for that long, but what are some of the things that you saw? You're like, all right, I'm getting closer. Here are the things I need to work on. So when that call does come, I'm ready and can and stay up there.
Change up usage. Obviously we're making progress with it, but still want to use that a little more, and just still always trying to tweak the slider and make it tighter, and almost kind of going like a cutter-ish type thing. Especially when I'm throwing two strikes, is really just being able to throw it hard, because I feel like the loopy slider, it's hard to have success with. Hard, nowadays harder is better. So that's kind of the big thing. That was something all year, and we're going to continue upon that this offseason and go into spring training. Is really just kind of throwing that slider harder and continue to get ahead in counts and be able to work both sides of the plate.
No, I know that's, your ultimate goal. That's why you're doing this. Do you have to pump the brakes a little bit? I mean, you get to double A and as a young person, you're being like, but this is easy. I'm like, get me there tomorrow. Get me there yesterday. Do you have to pump the brakes with yourself at all and be like, okay, like I'm just starting this process.
Yeah, a little bit. It's easy to kind of look forward, but then again, 100 professional innings. So, especially this year, it was just jumping from maybe 60 high school innings to 103 this year. So that was kind of a big jump, and we're still making those baby steps to where MLB guys are going 150, almost 200 innings. So progressively, just getting up to that point and working that big load or that workload, and trying to stay healthy within that whole year.
Just a couple more. And with Andrew Painter, our pipeline pitching prospect of the year, I know you take pride in so the little things. It's not just the stuff and throwing strikes, but being a good athlete on the mound, fielding your position. You know, I think not everyone understands the work that goes into that, but I would imagine that's also something that's been sort of natural for you. And they may see you and think, well, that guy's a pitcher clearly because you're, you know, 6'7", 6'8", but like how much pride do you take in having a good pickoff move? I mean, you probably surprise people with the fact that you move as well as you do.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I definitely don't take it for granted. It definitely helps out, especially this year in Reading, I had a good amount of pickoffs. So it just kind of makes it easier when you are able to hold guys. And I think that's something that's overlooked, you know, as a pitcher. I think everything is like, all right, you know, metrics and spin rate and velo and getting guys out. And like, yeah, of course, that's baseline. But what happens when you do get someone on? So being able to like hold runners on is something that I've always taken pride in and, you know, continuously worked on and varying holds and stuff. So it's, I mean, it was great to see, you know, that paying dividends this year in Double A and, you know, being able to keep people from being aggressive on the base paths.
Now, I heard a story that when you were in high school, you used to get behind the plate in practice and take it. Is this a true story?
Yeah, I was just, you know, I was just trying to have fun. We were missing a backup catcher, so figured I'd help out and be a bullpen catcher. And then I was like, the bullpen catching, yeah, it's all right, but let me get out there and let me take infield outfield.
I think the Phillies would probably kill you if you tried to do that any time right now. What kind of pop time are we talking here?
Off the record, we didn't have anything. You know, I'm thinking like 185, probably something around there.
Yeah, I mean, pick an elite level time if you're going to, you know, make something up that you didn't know the time of. So
yeah, you know, maybe down to 1.7 on a good day, but you know, you can't ask anyone.
There's a lot of you to unwind, so I would imagine it would take some time just to get into the line position. Now, I know it was for fun and things like that, but I think it does say a little something about your athleticism. Joking, it was like the only thing that would have been better for you then is if you could have caught yourself in a game, you know, like Bugs Bunny style.
Yeah. Yeah, no, it's always, I mean, that's always been a thing. I played basketball in high school. I was always, you know, running around. Dad wouldn't let me play football, but I was always, you know, trying to throw the football and do stuff like that. So, you know, growing up, I was constantly moving, and especially in South Florida, there was always nice weather. So there was always something to do. So I kind of just continued up until here.
You mentioned basketball because I think you and I talked about this a little bit in spring training, because between you and Mick Abel, like, you guys could put together a pretty good front court there. Who plays where? Have you, you know, you had some guesses back then. I'm wondering now that you've gotten to know each other even better, and touch, that's half joke, but also touch on how great it was to have someone like Mick going through this process with you, and then who plays where on the front court.
Okay. Yeah. It was great. We had two stops together. I met him up in Jersey, and then we both went up to Reading together. So, I mean, it was great to kind of have someone to lean on, and someone that shared, you know, such similar backgrounds, you know, both high school guys, taken pretty close together, and just kind of having that background and being able to connect, you know, pre-draft and on the circuit and stuff like that. And, you know, throw the same pitches, pretty similar profile. And it's just nice because we kind of, you know, push each other. And like a lot of times when we're throwing, it's consistently like working on, you know, like different pitches, and he'll always have feedback for me, and, you know, I'll have feedback for him. So it's great to kind of just, and like earlier on, he was pitching before me, he was pitching like Fridays and I was on Saturday. So it's nice to read hitters and be able to pick up everything that he was doing and kind of just tone in on how he was working hitters and everything from there, other than being able to take something away from his start into mine the next day and being able to talk to him before that. So, I mean, that was great, really just being able to have someone to lean on and be able to communicate that. On the court, you know, I think I said I'd probably run center. I'd probably run five. You'd probably run the four, three. I'm still going to stick with that. As much as I want to run the one, I don't know if they'd let me do that.
I mean, if you were a catcher, I mean, in high school, why not run the one?
That's what I'm saying.
Magic Johnson made an entire career as a point guard at 6'9", so you can do it too.
I'll do it.
Andrew, I want to thank you so much for your time. Thanks for joining us here on the MLB Pipeline podcast. Congratulations on the award, and we look forward to seeing continued greatness from you in the years to come.
Thank you, Jeff.
We'll be right back after this break.
Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
Welcome back to the MLB Pipeline Podcast. I'm Jason Ratliff here with Jim Callis and Jonathan Mayo. And thanks very much to Andrew Painter for joining us on the episode today. Our 2022 Pipeline Pitching Prospect of the Year. Great season and a great interview. Now let's turn to the hitting prospect of the year. And while the pitching prospect of the year decision was a pretty easy one, there were certainly several outstanding performances on the mound this year, but that was a relatively easy decision, especially compared to the decision on the hitting side, where is it fair to say that the were there three clear-cut finalists in your estimation?
Yeah.
Or would you even say?
Yeah, I would say two. Yeah, actually, I went in looking at it thinking there might only be two. But I think when looking at it more carefully, the sort of three quote-unquote finalists all deserve to be considered.
Yeah, so in the end, we went with the previously accidentally mentioned Gunnar Henderson of the Orioles, who just had a ridiculous season. As a matter of fact, when I accidentally conflated Gunnar Richardson and
Gunnar Richardson.
Oh my
God! What are you doing? It's $50,000 in fine.
Where does Gunnar Henderson and Heston Kjerstad or Keston Hjerstad?
Yeah, I know. It's because what Jason didn't tell you is he has this phobia of calling him Keston Hjerstad instead of Heston Kjerstad. So I think that's why he called him Gunnar Henderson earlier, so he didn't have to say his name. And
I'm trying to figure out who Gunnar Richardson is.
So. Trevor Tremaine.
Nice.
The reason
that's an inside joke right there. Please continue.
I said earlier that the reason that I said his name was because I was at that time reading a tweet that was about to go out, which said that he was named our hitting prospect of the year in a season in which he didn't face a pitcher younger than him. Which is pretty incredible. He just, scaled that system, ended up in the big leagues. I don't know. Do you guys happen to know what we had as his ETA heading into this year? Like, did we think that it was possible that
I probably said 23.
Cause he didn't do well in AA last year. You know,
right.
He didn't control the strike zone. So I bet you went 23 also.
Yeah. Cause I think probably my guess, I was like, all right, even if he starts to figure things out, it's half the year in AA, maybe half the year in AAA, and then next year he impacts the big leagues.
So, yeah, I mean, the other two finalists, Ellie De La Cruz, Ellie De La Richardson of the Reds, Ellie De La Cruz of the Reds, and Corbin Carroll of the D-backs. And Ellie had probably the gaudiest numbers. You know, there were times we were keeping an eye out, like he could be 30-30, he could be, you know, he could be 30-40, he could be 30-50. I mean, you know, benchmarks that we have very rarely seen in the minors ever. And then Corbin Carroll, I think a little more similar to Gunnar Henderson. Is that fair to say in terms of, you know, guys that climb the ranks and then, you know, put up numbers in the big leagues too? But in the end, well, a combination of Henderson doing it across multiple levels and at the age at which he did it. But three fantastic seasons here. What set our winner apart for you guys?
Yeah. I mean, it was interesting because I think when we first started to discuss it, initially it was like, oh, I think Ellie De La Cruz is going to be the guy. And then I started looking at the numbers a little more carefully. And listen, Ellie De La Cruz had a ridiculous season. And I think in any other year, he would have been the choice or in a lot of other years. And if we had decided on him, what he did was astounding. And I think that the fact of the matter is that Gunnar Henderson is less than a year older than Ellie De La Cruz, who made it to AA, didn't perform great in AA, but still, like, to do what he did at that age, and the numbers you pointed out were outlandish. But, you know, Gunnar Henderson made it to the big leagues, performed in the big leagues, isn't that much older. And that biggest piece, as Jim was pointing out, last year, the one thing that he didn't do all that well, especially as he moved up the ladder, was control the strike zone. And he knew that that was something he needed to work on. I mean, I talked to him. It turned out to be his last day in AA when he was already showing improvements on that. He knew that that was what he needed to work on. And he just continued to do that. He's drawn more than 90 walks combined. He also was 20-20. And, you know, some of his numbers were actually slightly better than De La Cruz's. And looking at them side by side like that made him the choice. And, you know, Corbin Carroll had a very good year, and we shouldn't discount him. But it was really, to me, those two that I was looking at more closely.
Yeah, I'd say Carroll was third for me, too. I think if De La Cruz had finished a little stronger, I don't think he homered in the last 3 weeks of the season. If he had maybe finished on a little bit of a tear or gotten to the, I don't have, you're Mr. 2020, Jason. The last guy who had a 30 homer, 50 steal season in the minors, was it Jose Cardinal? Jose Cardinal seems to be the answer to a lot of these questions.
I think they're one in 81 and one in 61.
Was it Willie Rayford? Did he go 30-50?
Royster,
yeah. Did he go 30-50?
Willie Richardson.
Yeah. But, I think if Ellie De La Cruz had finished a little stronger, but just the way that Gunnar finished and in the big leagues too. I think in a depending on the competition in a given year, that any of those three guys had a season that was worthy of winning the award.
All right, here's a question for you guys. And Jim, you'll have to contemplate this more approximately a year from now when you're working on your story to rank rookies based on their long-term value, which you're doing for this year's rookie class now. But these guys won't be involved because they still have their rookie status. Who do you take? You got to take one of these guys in the long run.
I take Gunnar Henderson. I think he might be the best hitter to three, and he plays on the dirt. I think he's a better hitter than Ellie De La Cruz, and I take him playing on the dirt over Corbin Carroll. That's my, you know, nitpicking to take Gunnar. So I would take Gunnar Henderson if I could have any of the three guys for long-term value.
Jonathan?
I like having the number two pick in this draft. That's tough.
You can take him too. It's just who would you take?
I know. I'm just, I think I would lean towards Gunnar Henderson also. I do think that Ellie De La Cruz will make some adjustments and the plate discipline will get enough better where those tools are going to play. And I keep feeling that Corbin Carroll's getting the short shrift here. I think he's just going to steadily continue to put up very, very good numbers. But both of them have the chance to stay on the dirt. So I think I would probably also give a slight edge to Gunnar Henderson. What about you, Jason?
I was going to quickly transition to talk about our the rest of our prospect team of the year before you could ask me that. You beat me to it. I want to go with Corbin Carroll, and I can't quite put my finger on why.
Because his name's easiest to pronounce.
That's it. All right, so these three guys were among the first team on our prospect team of the year. The rest of the team looks like this. Catcher Endy Rodriguez, who slashed .323, .407, .590, the Pirates' number six prospect and number 98 overall. At first base, Kyle Manzardo, not on the top 100 prospects list, but is the Rays' number six prospect. At second base, Emmanuel Valdez, another non-top 100 prospect who had a huge year, Boston's number 18 prospect, 28 home runs, 107 RBIs, slash .296, .376, .542. Brett Beatty was our third base prospect on the first team, the Mets number two prospect and number 18 overall. Ellie De La Cruz at short, Carroll in the outfield, along with Vaughn Brown, who I think had one of the best seasons of anyone. Would he have potentially been in the top five and considering hitting prospects of the year? Or
it's tough because to me, I guess just the way we did things at Baseball America with our minor league player of the year award, like prospecting goodness was a significant factor. And Von Braun's a prospect, but like for an award like this, to me, it's an elite prospect. Like Matt Mervis had a great year too. He led the minors, I think, in total bases and extra base hits. I wouldn't have picked Matt Mervis for prospect or hitting prospect of the year, I guess what I'm trying to say. I was say prospect hitter of the year. So like for me, no. I mean, if you're going on pure numbers, Von Braun, just on the, you know, slash line, had the best slash line in the minors, and he hit 23 homers, and he stole 44 bases. But he was also, he was 24.
Right.
He didn't play, he played in double A barely at the end of the year, but he got most of his damage in A ball. So like me personally, great year. I think he belongs on this team. I would have had a hard time saying he's the hitting prospect of the year.
All right. And then the final outfielder on the team, Jackson Churio, maybe didn't put up as gaudy of numbers as some of these guys that we've talked about, but you know, you have to consider that he did it at just 18 years old across A, high A, and double A. And I said the numbers weren't gaudy, but, you know, 288, 342, 538 with 20 home runs and 16 stolen bases, you know, and just rose up the ranks kind of unparalleled with anyone else this year. And then Gunnar Henderson, we slotted him in as the DH on the team. And then in addition to Andrew Painter, the left-handed pitching prospect of the year is Rays number 7 prospect, Mason Montgomery. There's also a second team. That story, you can find it on MLB.com/pipeline. Not going to run through the second team here, but definitely go check that out. And guys, why don't we – oh, do we have a – oh, I almost left out the reliever of the year.
And Eric Torres is mad.
Oh, man.
Sorry, it's Jason's bias against Kansas State products.
It's a well-known bias.
I've spent some time in Manhattan. I like Manhattan. It's not true. Eric Torres, Angels, number 28 prospect, had 22 saves, 1.59 ERA, 143 average against, and a .94 whip. And then you can go check out the second team on MLB.com/pipeline. All right, let us move on to our question from the mailbag. This one comes from, this is a repeat performer.
Yep.
But not Stevie D.
Not the repeat performer, but a repeat performer. At Balls and Gutters, Twitter handle, asks, if Nick Gonzalez does well again in the AFL, does it hold the same weight as last year? Does it prove that the struggles in spring were injury related? So Gonzalez was out here last year and had a good fall league. If he does it again, does it prove that his struggles in the spring were injury related?
I don't think it'll carry the same weight as last year. Yes, the injuries have really hurt his production. He may just be a slow starter. So, this year he got out of the gate starting slowly and then he got hurt. So again, he only played 74 games this year. He did hit well down the stretch again. So it wouldn't surprise me if he goes out and swings the bat very well in the fall league. But, I don't know, Jim, maybe you feel differently, but like last year, it was his first year of pro ball. He got hurt. He came back second half of the year, may have been the best hitting prospect in minor league baseball. And he carried that over and we got excited and maybe we put too much weight into his fall league performance. But this year, he wasn't hitting well before he got hurt. He's 23 now. He's going to be 24. It's not like he's old. I think it's important for him to get reps and get himself going. So hopefully next year he can be the hitter we think he's capable of. But I won't be as excited by a strong Nick Gonzalez fall league showing as I was a year ago.
Well, I would be as excited because I had him on my total base team.
Well, that's fair.
I had him last year and I have him again this year. But no, I agree. I don't think the AFL
keeper league
proves anything just because, as we've talked about many times, the hitters are way ahead of the pitchers. There aren't a lot of top pitching prospects in the league. The ball flies here. A lot of times the best pitchers don't even stay here for the full season. So it's just a very, very offensive minded league. So I agree. We did get excited. Now, we also got excited, I think, watching him hit like he did, because he was also the best, you know, one of the best hitters in his draft class, number 6 overall pick. He might be the only player in NCAA Division I history to lead that level in batting 1 year and homers another, even though the homers was a shorter pandemic season. He was Cape Cod League MVP, so he proved himself with wood bat. So his pedigree was very strong. And then when we all saw him rake last year, like, okay, that's the Nick Gonzalez everybody knows and loves. So, you know, he did finish strong. I mean, obviously, selfishly hope he has a big AFL and think he will, because I took him in the second round of our total base draft. But, yeah, I don't think it would be quite the same because we've seen it before. And like I said, if I'm really parsing the words here, I don't think AFL proves anything. It's more, you know, I will say it's interesting, you know, guys like Logan Ohapi, who weren't really on our radar last year, he obviously is a top 100 guy now. Curtis Meade's a top 100 guy right now. You know, Nelson Velasquez got to the big leagues. Caleb Killian got to the big leagues. So, you know, you can break out here in a way. But if, you know, Nick Gonzalez hits 380 with 6 home runs in the fall league, I'm not going to necessarily be like, okay, he's a lock to be an all-star. So I think you and I are of the same mind here, Jonathan.
You know, Gonzalez did hit well down the stretch in September. He slashed 302, 415, 566 at a 981 OPS compared to April and May when he was 749, 738 OPS. All right. Thanks to Balls and Gutters for that question. Thanks to Andrew Painter for joining us on the show. And thanks to everybody for listening. That's going to do it for this week's episode of the MLB Pipeline Podcast. Don't forget to subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts so you don't miss an episode. If you're enjoying the show or have any suggestions, leave us a rating and a review. Thanks for listening, everybody. Beware the Haboobs. See you next week.